For much of the nation, Iowa is flyover country. For those of us who live here, we know better. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we'll talk to some of Iowa's best ambassadors, people who write about the state for a living. Trevor Mears is the executive editor of Midwest Living. Mike Chapman is the publisher of the Iowa History Journal. And Beth Wilson is editor of The Iowan. We'll talk to all of them about the stories they tell, what they believe makes Iowa unique, and the audience they're trying to reach. We'd also like to hear from you. What stories have meant a lot to you? What do you think people need to know about Iowa? You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after this news. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Most of us who live here in Iowa believe that this is a pretty special place. It's nice to have that opinion reinforced every now and again. And that's one of the things that happens when you open up one of the magazines that focuses on Iowa. And today I have with me some of Iowa's best ambassadors, people who write about the state for a living. Trevor Mears is the executive editor of Midwest Living. Mike Chapman is the publisher of the Iowa History Journal. And Beth Wilson is the editor of The Iowan. Thank you all so much for being here today.
Glad to be here.
Glad to be here.
Trevor, I want to start with you. And Midwest Living, most of us who have seen it know that it's a glossy, beautiful magazine that showcases the best of the entire Midwest region. What is your mission with the magazine?
Well, Midwest Living is published by Meredith Corporation out of Des Moines, and we were started a little over 20 years ago with the idea of, like you said, celebrating the best of the lifestyle in the Midwest. And our readers have the perspective that truly the Midwest is a place they choose to live, even if they're from here originally, and they honestly believe it is the best place in the world to live. And that's the idea that we celebrate, is that kind of lifestyle. And our readers are spread across a 12-state region, which is the Midwest, and in our definition, spanning from the Dakotas and the Great Plains of Nebraska and Kansas all the way east to Ohio. And most of our readers are – they're looking for service-oriented content. So we do every story we have is going to have some takeaway, a trip you can take, a recipe you can make, a decorating idea you can try in your home. And so we deliver those kinds of pieces throughout the Midwest, with obviously Iowa playing a large role in that.
And what role does Iowa play? I know that it's not the most populous state in the Midwest region. It's not the most well thought of state in the Midwest region. How do you decide what role each of the states plays?
Well, obviously, with a magazine that's covering a large region, we try and balance that coverage. So we give readers something from near them in every issue, because obviously most of the travel in the Midwest is what you call the rubber tire circuit. It's people who want a weekend getaway. And as we know, people are taking shorter vacations. Fewer people are doing the big overseas vacations and long trips. There's a lot of short getaways on the weekends. And so that's what we focus on, is giving stories throughout the region of getaways they can do. And so they're driving trips. And Iowa has so many of those that people sometimes overlook. And we'll talk about some of those as we go today. But certainly along the Mississippi River region, up by Decorah, the Lus Hills, all these areas are things we draw out. And Iowa, in so many ways, it's funny when we do focus groups, when we ask readers, how would you define the Midwest? And pretty much every reader in our region defines the Midwest as the town they live in, and maybe their whole state. But that's about it. And to me, though, when you look at Iowa, I think it so much embodies what the Midwest is. You think of all the traits that people have in their minds of the Midwest, both in terms of geography and also just the psychology of the Midwest. And our readers constantly, if you ask them, they bring up the same things that we're all familiar with. They think the Midwest is – it's a friendly place. It's an honest place. It's hardworking. It's good neighbors. It's genuine, all those things. And certainly, I think Iowa, to a T, embodies so much of that. And so many famous, I guess, tropes you could say about the Midwest have originated here, right down to like the Music Man and things like that, and the Iowa State Fair and these other things that come from the Midwest, the Field of Dreams. And so in many ways, I think Iowa embodies that. And that's a storyline we can play off of many times when we talk about Iowa, is kind of that psychological real estate that Iowa possesses as being really a good embodiment of the Midwest.
Well, Beth, I want to move to you. I know the Iowan magazine has been around since 1952, and you've been there nearly 4 years. What do you see as the mission of the magazine?
Well, the magazine was started by a Shenandoah native, David Archie, and he was somebody in a what's sort of an often repeated theme Someone who grew up in Iowa, left the state for a number of years. He pursued a publishing career in New York, and he returned to Iowa, like so many of us, myself included, and wanted to give the state something he thought it was missing, which was a forum where Iowans could learn more about themselves and also a vehicle to sort of interpret Iowa to the rest of the world. And that's still the mission of the Iowan today. With each issue, we try to present a number of slices of Iowa life that sort of showcases for people what building a life in Iowa looks like.
And who do you see as your audience?
It's interesting. The print publication has been around for almost six decades, and we have extreme loyalty to that publication. So we have a lot of readers who have been with us, some actually from the very beginning. So that gives our demographic for the print publication, skews us into an older age bracket. And I would say the print publication is primarily being subscribed to or picked up by people, baby boomers or older, 50, you know, maybe 50s and older. We've had an online presence now for, I would say for a year and a half, the website a little bit longer than that. And we've noticed that the online audience skews a little younger. The content that's responded to in both those different versions of the magazine is interesting and I think speaks to there being a different audience out there.
Is most of your, I guess this seems like a silly question, but is the vast majority of your subscription base in Iowa?
No. In fact, that's an interesting question. We have subscribers in all 99 counties of Iowa and in all 50 states across the country. We even have a few dozen overseas subscriptions. But 40% of our subscriber base is out of the state of Iowa, outside.
And probably mostly Iowa expatriates, I would guess.
I would guess that. I think that's a very good guess. And I think that speaks to the extremely strong loyalty that Iowans have to their home state.
You updated the look of the magazine in 2009. When you went through that process, what did you discover about what you were doing?
When I came to the magazine 4 years ago, we took time to go through back issues for the last couple of decades. And we felt that the magazine was possibly in danger of drifting a little too heavily into nostalgia. And while there is a strong sense of nostalgia among our readership, we wanted to sort of re-energize the true mission of the magazine, which is, of course, living in Iowa today and making sure we maintain that quality of life for tomorrow. So we gave the magazine an updated look. We revamped some of the content to make it a little more dynamic, and we felt that gave us a more flexible magazine that allows us to cover a lot more content.
And may help you attract some of that younger demographic as well.
Right.
Mike Chapman is also with us. He's the publisher of the Iowa History Journal and founder of the journal. And Mike, you had a long and illustrious career in the newspaper business. You're also the author of 21 books, fiction and nonfiction. Why did you decide you wanted to launch a magazine in what could be your retirement?
That's a very interesting question, and I get asked that a lot, Beth. I gave a speech yesterday in Iowa Falls to a historical group, and I've been all over the state giving speeches, probably 22 in the last year, and that question comes up all the time, and I struggle with the answer. But after 35 years of being a newspaper man, mostly in the state of Iowa, and as you said, I've been the author of 22 books, I've always had a passion for history of all sorts, and I love Iowa history. I grew up in Waterloo, and that's where the Five Sullivans came from, of course, and that's where Dan Gable came from. I've been a wrestling enthusiast all my life. I opened the International Wrestling Institute and Museum in Newton in 1998 while I was publisher of the Newton Daily News. And then we moved that to Waterloo 4 years ago and put Dan Gable's name on it. And history has always fascinated me. When you walk in the lobby of the Wrestling Museum, you see a life-size portrait of Abraham Lincoln as a wrestler at the age of 23. in 1832, and people say Lincoln was a wrestler. And then you go around the corner, you'd see a life-size etching of Jacob wrestling the angel of the Lord as discussed in the Bible. So history has always fascinated me, and I felt that there was a void in the marketplace. I felt that there was so many great stories about so many great Iowans that just simply weren't getting the attention that they needed. And in 1984, I wrote a book called Iowans of Impact about 25 famous Iowans, and it had Herbert Hoover, John Wayne, and Niall Kinnock on the cover. And Robert Ray, the six-term governor, wrote the foreword. And that book has sold out and been reprinted and sold out, and everywhere I go, people still are trying to buy it and talk about it. But I think life is about people, and Iowa has had so many fascinating people in its history. And my mission is to keep alive the stories about great Iowans and to tell them to young people, to inspire them, and to re-energize the tradition, the heritage that many older Iowans cherish so deeply.
How long have you been publishing the journal?
We've had 10 issues. We've been out since January of 2009. Our first issue had Niall Kinnock, a beautiful color cover picture of him. And the headline said, "Who was Niall Kinnock really, and why is he still important today?" And like I told the people in Iowa Falls yesterday, football was such a small part of who Niall Kinnock was. He was president of the senior class at the University of Iowa. He was a Phi Beta Kappa scholar. His grandfather was a governor of the state of Iowa. He was somebody with an incredible political future ahead of him. I talked to Ronald Reagan face-to-face in 1990 when I was executive editor of the Dixon Telegraph, which Dixon, Illinois, is Ronald Reagan's hometown. And I asked him, when he was at WHO Radio and covering Iowa football, if he'd ever met Niall Kinnock. And he stopped dead in his tracks, and he said, "I never met Niall Kinnock, but I followed his career so closely, and I admired him greatly." And I said, "Mr. President, what could Niall Kinnock have been if World War II hadn't taken him?" And Ronald Reagan looked me in the face, and he said, "I think Niall Kinnock could have been president of the United States." And I've given so many speeches around the state and on so many radio shows, and people said to me, "What an incredible story. You have to keep that alive." And that really was the genesis for me starting Iowa History Journal. That one conversation with Ronald Reagan in 1990, talking about Niall Kinnock, is the genesis for me keeping – there's thousands of stories like that about great Iowans. We're doing a big feature story on Merle Hay. It amazes me how little people know about Merle Hay.
We'll talk more about some of your favorite stories in your magazine, Mike, and also we'll ask Trevor and Beth about their favorite stories in some of their magazines as well in just a few minutes. And if you'd like to join our conversation, you can. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm talking with Trevor Mears of Midwest Living, Mike Chapman of the Iowa History Journal, and Beth Wilson of the Iowan Magazine. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about magazines that feature Iowa, writing about the state of Iowa. I have Trevor Mears, who's the executive editor of Midwest Living, with me, Beth Wilson, the editor of The Iowan, and Mike Chapman, who's the publisher of the Iowa History Journal. And I want to talk a little bit about some of the stories that you all have told about Iowa. And Beth, we'll start with you this time. Beth, can you think of a story that you're particularly proud of that you've featured in The Iowan recently?
Well, of course, I'm proud of everything that we put out in the Iowan. You know, it's really hard to choose something. I think the stories that have had the biggest impact for me personally are those that surprise me and surprise readers. And we try to do a lot of storytelling that does surprise even people that live in Iowa, so that you're constantly learning something about the state of Iowa. I had mentioned earlier when you and I emailed, I really love the issues where we're able to put together content that exemplifies the diversity of Iowa. We did an issue that I loved where we showcased one of the articles. We showcased in a beautiful, glorious way the Des Moines Metropolitan Opera, And, you know, here's a renowned cultural experience right here in Iowa. It's well known. It draws an audience from across the state and even out of state. And alongside that, we ran an article that was a lead up to the 2008 caucuses. And the story took visitors to small town Iowa inside coffee shops where people were meeting for morning coffee and sitting around in this Iowa tradition of hashing over politics over brewed coffee. And it was a wonderful juxtaposition of two opposites in Iowa. I don't know if opposites is quite the right word, but how complex the state is. And surprising.
How do you decide what you're going to feature in the magazine?
That's a very, very long process. Of course, collect information on a daily basis. I'm sure your other guests will agree. We all do a lot of reading. Pull a lot of information from other sources. My email inbox is full on a daily basis of announcements and press releases and information that I receive from a number of organizations or universities or individuals. I hear from readers on a constant basis letting me know something that they're doing, something that's going on in their community. And although I don't get away from my desk as much as I would like, I do once in a while get out and around Iowa and see things and learn things and make notes. And the magazine is really put together with the skills and experience of a tremendous pool of freelancers. And we have some very talented writers and photographers that are out in the state on a constant basis. They always have their eyes and ears open. And a lot of our editorial content is driven by their discoveries.
You can join our conversation today by calling 866-780-9100. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Chris is on the line from Ottumwa. Hello, Chris.
Yes, I was wondering if your guests would reference materials for the K-12 audience. I know a few years ago the Iowa legislation for Iowa studies to have that taught in high school and to encourage Iowa students to learn more about their state. And I just wondered if they had recommendations. One of the guests commented that the journal was kind of read by the baby boomers, 55 and up. So what's available for students to read? Could Talk of Iowa put a bibliography on their website with choices from your guests or readers?
Well, we can certainly talk about that. Mike, why don't you answer that question? Do you have some ideas that you'd like to at least see young people looking at?
That's a wonderful question, and we put a lot of emphasis on making sure our magazine is in every high school library in the state of Iowa and every public library. We had one teacher from Southwest Iowa subscribe pick up 30 subscriptions because she said she wanted it in her classroom. It was such a valuable tool. I gave a speech at Ankeny High School a couple weeks ago. They have a terrific teacher over there, Tyler Anderson, who's really into teaching the history of the state. I was at Stanton, Iowa, 3 months ago giving a speech down there, and they made it very attractive for students to come. And to answer her question directly, I think the way you get well, let me back up, too. I was at West Waterloo High School 3 months ago, and I gave a speech about Fred Becker. And when you ask us to talk about our favorite stories, I'd like to have an opportunity to talk about Fred Becker. And it was a writing class, a high-level writing class, and there were 40 students in there. Actually, I gave it a year ago, and they invited me back to give this speech again. And now they taped it, and they ran it on their school video network, and they want me to come back and talk. Young people love to hear stories about Iowans who've achieved. Doreen Wilbur is the first Olympic female champion in Iowa history from Jefferson, Iowa, 1972. She won her gold medal, and we featured her in our very first article because these stories are inspirational to young people. So your caller is right on the mark. She can go to our website and see all the schools we go to, and we have two markets. One is the young people to inspire them to think that they can do the best by reading stories about Iowans who've scaled the mountaintop, and then for the older Iowans who are proud of their heritage.
Well, when before your magazine was founded, though, Mike, were there any other things that you were looking to that you might be able to recommend to young people?
Honestly, not really. That's why I created Iowa History Journal.
Okay. How about you, Beth? What do you think?
Well, the Iowan, as I said, has been around a long time, and we have a tremendous archive. We're in the process now of trying to make that electronically available. The magazine, the issues themselves are in a number of libraries and schools around the state. We do get a request. I mean, people do find our older content or find a reference to it quite often, and we get requests for those, which we always make available. On an ongoing basis, we try to make sure we – because a lot of our older issues are hardbound, it means we have to go back and scan and make PDF or something available on the website. But we do have people reference – the Iowan is interesting in that it's its shelf life extends well beyond the newsstand dates, and we have people who actually keep collections of the Iowan and use them. And that's exactly what we want the magazine to be for people, as a reference source.
Well, Chris, I hope that helps you out with your search. And if you'd like to call or join our conversation, you can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at IPR Talk. And we only have a couple of minutes before we get to our break here. So, Trevor, let me turn to you. With Midwest Living, how do you decide what stories in Iowa you're going to cover, what places you're going to write about?
Well, there's a couple of different angles we come at when you're writing, certainly a place like Iowa, when you're talking to a regional audience. As I mentioned, a lot of our readers are focused mainly on what's close to them. And so to turn them on to a trip, for example, in a state that's not right next door, you have to excite them to the possibilities in that state that are beyond the stereotype they have in their mind. And that applies to almost every state. But certainly in Iowa, a lot of people who don't live here would think, well, you have cornfields and what else? So we turn to surprising discoveries, and there's so much in the state of Iowa you can surprise people with. And a lot of times that just comes down to a single visual that captures their imagination. And photography, much like with Best Magazine, is a critical piece of the puzzle for us. And we use professional photographers from all over the region. These are people whose work you'll see in National Geographic and Outside Magazine and in other publications that put an emphasis on visuals. So many times we are showing you trips that capture your imagination visually, and then we flesh that out with the details on how to take that trip. And that will be things like one story I like to tell is we shot it years ago. We published an image of a trail in the Luss Hills over by Council Bluffs. And it was one that I tore out and hung on my wall because I'm a hiker. And it just inspired me to someday I want to be on that trail. And then last summer I got the opportunity to do it just like they say, as it was in the magazine. I got to live the story. And that happens with so many of our readers. And just like Beth mentioned, our readers hang on to our magazines for years. We will do stories on businesses. I'll talk probably a little bit later about a story in Van Buren County we did. And I talked to a woman who runs a pottery shop down there, and she said she'll have people – we mentioned her shop 4 or 5 years ago. People will come in holding that article, and they've been holding on to it because they filed that away as a place they wanted to get to sometime. And they held on to the Midwest Living article to inspire that trip. And that's very much what we're about. So we're looking for places like that will capture the imagination, give them an idea.
If there's a story that inspired you, maybe you've hung on to it for years and shared it with your friends, let us know. 866-780-9100. We're talking about writing about Iowa today with Trevor Mears from Midwest Living, Mike Chapman from the Iowa History Journal, and Beth Wilson from the Iowan Magazine. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about some of the magazines that feature Iowa. We're talking with Mike Chapman, who's the publisher of the Iowa History Journal, Beth Wilson, editor of the Iowan Magazine, and Trevor Mears, the executive editor of Midwest Living. And you're welcome to join our conversation. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Maybe there's a story story that you read in one of these magazines or in another magazine that features Iowa that has stuck with you for years, that really made you think about something, made you learn something, that you've shared with friends and family. We'd love to hear about that story. The number to call, 866-780-9100, or talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And one of our listeners sent an email who said that, although I'm certainly enjoying today's show, I wish that you'd included a guest from our Iowa magazine. It's a newer magazine commanding a large readership and is based in Ames, so they just wanted to put in a plug for one of their favorite publications. And Mike, I want to ask you, you mentioned before we got to the break, you mentioned one of your favorite stories, which is about Fred Becker, and this was featured in your magazine a while back. But tell us who Fred Becker was.
Well, you're going to have to cut me off, Charity, because I could talk about an hour and a half about Fred, and I do that often. Briefly, in 1916, he became the very first All-American football player at the University of Iowa. He was a sophomore. He had a great future ahead of him. He went off to World War I. He signed up. He enlisted. He became an officer, a Marine officer. He fought in France, saw a lot of action. He charged up a hill and took out a machine gun nest and saved the lives of 32 of his comrades. 2 days later, he was shot in the throat, killed, died right on the spot, was buried in France, 22 years of age. 3 years later, his body was brought back to Waterloo, Iowa. 5,000 people went to the funeral. It was the largest crowd ever to attend any event in Waterloo history. It just so happens he was a graduate of East Waterloo High School, and that's where I went to high school. One day, driving by the front of the school 3 years ago, I saw a little plaque out in front that I had never noticed. And it said, in memory of our classmates who gave their life for freedom's cause, Lieutenant Fred Becker, killed at Battle of Chateau Thierry in France, July 18, 1918. So I started doing research on him and wrote a story about him for the Iowa football program. He had never received any votes for the Iowa Athletic Hall of Fame. He went in unanimously. They couldn't find a living family member to represent him on the day of the induction, so they asked me to go out down on the field. So there I was in front of 76,000 people last September 5th. Standing on the field at Niall Kinnick Stadium, and Niall Kinnick is one of my heroes, listening to him read off the credentials about Fred Becker. Right after that, he was inducted into the East Waterloo High School Hall of Fame. They'd completely forgotten him. And then I put him on the cover of Iowa History Journal, October 2009, Fred Becker, his incredible story of Iowa athletics and patriotism. As I go around the state, I tell stories at veterans groups and to citizens and to that West Waterloo group of young students about Fred Becker, and you could hear a pin drop. He was 22 years old. His goal was to become a surgeon and work with the Mayo brothers up in Rochester. He gave his life for freedom's cause. He's the first All-American football player in the history of the University of Iowa. He'd been completely forgotten, and now he's very well known around the state again. So that's the kind of impact that you can have with history. And the Iowan has run those kind of stories in the past, too. And, you know, to have the opportunity to tell the story of Fred Becker and Niall Kinnick and Doreen Wilbur and people like that means the world to me.
Mike, where do you get, obviously you got inspiration for that story from a plaque in front of your old high school, but how do you go about searching out the stories that you might want to tell?
Well, you keep your eyes and ears open. Like I said, I give so many speeches and people come up to me afterwards. Yesterday at Iowa Falls, I probably got 30 ideas for stories. We sit there with our magazines afterwards and some of the 22 books I've written, and we sell the books and I sign them. And people love to tell me stories about their grandpa or their father. Just yesterday, a fellow told me a great story about his dad who served in World War II. And I said to him, do some research, follow up on that. And it's a story that we're very interested in. And you could just see he was shaking with emotion. He says, you mean you might print it if I wrote it? And I says, absolutely, we'd be very interested in that. So that's something we do too. We reach out to not necessarily professional writers. We have a fabulous story in the next issue about a woman who'd never written a story before about being a World War II bride, what it meant to be married and have her husband 2 days later gone off to war in Europe and didn't see him for 3 years, what it was like on the home front. She'd never written anything for publication before, and she did a terrific job. And she's 80 years old, and she just can't wait to see the issue. So we're not necessarily looking for Pulitzer Prize winning stories. We're looking for people who can tell a story that touches the heartstrings.
All right. Well, Paul from Strawberry Point is on the line at 866-780-9100, and he has a question for you, Trevor. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Thanks for having me on. When I was a kid, 40 years ago, on vacation out in Colorado, I remember telling somebody, they asked where I was from, and we said Northeast Iowa, and they asked us what we were doing in Colorado. We live in the most beautiful part of the world. And I thought about that a lot as I was growing up, that there's a lot of beautiful parts to Iowa and a lot of great history. When I first moved to where I am now, I just got every book I could from the library that had to do with Iowa and small-town Iowa and read every single one of them. I was wondering what the different magazines do to promote Iowa outside of Iowa, and what kind of circulation they get there, and do they share information with other states or stories with other states?
Okay, well,
we got a beautiful part of the country.
That's very true. And of course, with Midwest Living, you do have a broader audience.
Yes. Yeah. Midwest Living is circulated, much like Beth mentioned, with the circulation of the Iowan. We have subscribers in all the states and overseas. And many of our subscribers, just like she was describing, are kind of expatriates who have left the Midwest, but it still holds such a special place to them. They subscribe to the magazine just to get that feeling of going home with every issue. And obviously, when Iowa is featured in the magazine, as it is regularly, that just enlightens so much of the country to what's available here. And as you mentioned, you live in Strawberry Point. We did a story on the best state parks in the Midwest this summer, and Maquoketa Caves was one of those on there. So when we can bring a park like that in Iowa to the attention of all these people, it certainly draws people to that. My favorite stories on Iowa recently is last fall I did a piece on Van Buren County as a fall drive, and that's down with Bonaparte and Bentonsport. It's near Fort Madison, down there where the Des Moines River and the Mississippi meet up. And it was an area that I'd been hearing about for years. You need to go down there sometime, and I'd never been. And my family and I went down there and spent a few days on a fall drive, and it turned into this great story of this very relaxing county. There's not a single stoplight in Van Buren County, and that was part of the lead of my story. And when you're writing about a place like that, kind of an underappreciated place, I think so often the key is to talk about its strengths but not feel like you're overselling it. And so when we told the story of Van Buren County, we didn't try to tell you that it was loaded with numerous shops and just loaded with restaurants and things like some other fall destinations. But for what it is, it's a wonderful place to go and spend several days. And we talked about just the slow pace down there. And it's the kind of place where you go and you can watch the mist rise off the Des Moines River in the mornings. And then you can spend the afternoon at a potter's shop. And you can go to a local festival and hear a band methodically working its way through Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain and just kind of having that sort of afternoon. And so when we talk about a place like that, we want to be honest about what's there, but draw out the benefits of what is there. And that story in particular, kind of to answer your question, Paul, is we've got letters from the local tourism officials after that story was published. They said they saw these huge spikes in the web traffic to their site. They saw floods of people coming in that fall carrying Midwest Living sign. I read about this county, and I'm here because I read this story. And the potter I mentioned was there who said they had people coming in from years ago, another story. And so it definitely has an impact when we can draw attention to those kinds of places. Our readers are very active. They save these. They act on them. They take the trips. And it's just exciting to hear that they're responding to that. And then we get the letters when people say it turned out every bit as good as you had said in the magazine. And that's when I know we told that story with the right tone. We didn't oversell because we told them what was there. They went. They felt it lived up to their expectations. They enjoyed it. And now we've made a new fan for a new part of Iowa. And that's always exciting to see that.
During the break, Trevor, you and I were talking about the caller earlier, Chris from Ottumwa, who wanted to know some ideas for educating kids about Iowa history. And you had a couple of museums that
Sure.
you thought would be great places to visit.
Yeah,
with
we were
kids.
Talking just about how when you work at Midwest Living, everywhere you go, you get somebody saying, well, I'm going to be in X place. Where should I go while I'm there? And so, of course, I started thinking about that as we're talking about where could you what are some ways to get kids interested in Iowa and Iowa history? And I just wanted to point out the Historical Society in Des Moines is a great place to go. When I first moved to Iowa years and years ago, we went down there on our first weekend, and I was fascinated to start learning about Iowa at the Historical Center there right next to the Capitol in downtown Des Moines and learn about all these things I never had any clue about in Iowa, such as the button-making industries that they used to use out of the freshwater clams from the rivers and things like that. Also, the Mississippi River Center in Dubuque is a fantastic place to take kids. You can go and learn about the natural history of the river. They have alligators there, so they display wildlife for the entire stretch of the Mississippi River. You can see the boats that used to work the river. Is a great place to go. And, of course, Living History Farms in Urbandale, just outside of Des Moines. If people haven't been there, it's a fantastic place where kids can go and see the progression of agriculture in Iowa from Native Americans all the way up through more recent times. And that's another great place to go, just get hands-on and have kids have a chance to see live animals. They can talk to interpreters and just get a real sense of the progression of the state and that agricultural heritage that's so important to so much of Iowa still.
Paul, thank you so much for your call. And if you'd like to join our conversation, you can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Gary is on the line from Mason City. Hello, Gary.
Yeah, how do you handle the financing? I worked for Nebraska Land, 50, 30 years ago, and it took a pretty hefty subsidy from the Fish and Game Commission. Are you guys going to make it in this digital age without... without going broke?
Well, Beth, let's start with you.
Well, the magazine, the Iowan, includes advertising. That's primarily the financial base of the magazine. And we strive to create a magazine that's attractive to an audience that advertisers want to reach. That's an important part. You're right about the online world. That's a transition we're trying to make. We're a magazine that has such a long history in print, and our print product is so valuable. We want to make sure we give it its due attention, but we know that we have an online audience to reach as well. And there is a potential for advertising online as well. That's another important financial aspect of the magazine.
Well, and Trevor, when I look at the Midwest Living site, it's pretty clear to me that you and also other Meredith publications have made an effort to make sure that the advertising is visible online. Is that how you stay financially solvent?
Absolutely. I mean, it's everyone in publishing right now is working out their solutions to the digital transitions taking place. I think print does have a long life in front of it, depending on your type of publication. A publication like Midwest Living, it's such an experience to sit down with it and enjoy the photography and to kind of unplug. And so I think that will give the print product a long life in front of it. But at the same time, we are moving into digital very aggressively as a company with Meredith. We're constantly looking at innovating things. We're working on developing applications to be used on the iPad and going all the way forward. We're also working on new tools where we can give you the access to the kind of information we have in a much more streamlined format. So we've developed a new travel tool called Zoom, for example, which you can get through our website, where you can go in and point on a map to the place you're going to be, and then you can click if you want restaurants, attractions, lodgings, and it will pop up all the recommendations that Midwest Living has in that area. And that's just a recent invention over the last year that we've come up with to take the much of the magazine's role will continue to be the inspiration, the kind of the mini vacation feel, and then more the digital will be the quick delivery of the serviceable information you want to get your fingertips on right away.
Well, and how does it break down with Midwest Living? The subscription fee is very small, mm-hmm. really. So how dependent are you on subscribers at this point?
Well, certainly our subscribers are what the advertiser wants to
right.
reach. So we very much value we have about 1 million subscribers to the print product. And advertising is what drives the revenue, and that's typical of almost all publications right now. And that's something that all of us in publishing are continuing to look at different models going forward, especially when we start delivering things digitally. What will the pricing structure be for the content we deliver digitally? And if anyone out there has the answer, please let me know. But there's a lot of experiments being done out there.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly new developments. Time Inc. just announced last week that if you subscribe to People, you can get the iPad version of People for free. And that caused a bunch of tremors because, well, what does that mean for us? And for Midwest Living in particular, we're still early on with that. And all of our content is available on our website at no charge right now. I think we'll all have to figure out some sort of pricing structure going forward, depending on what the advertising outlook is on the web. But readers are the number one priority, especially for me. I sit on the editorial side of the aisle, not the advertising side. And my job is to satisfy the readers and deliver a product that they want, and that in turn creates the audience the advertisers want to reach.
Mike, you were brave and launched a publication in an age where publications are having a hard time. What do you think your secret to success will be?
Well, there's several secrets, quote unquote, to the success that we will have or will not have. Both Trevor and Beth work for publications with tremendous heritage and tradition and loyal subscribers. They both have solid companies behind them. And one thing I've always believed in is content is king. The big newspapers are really struggling because of circulation costs and because of people can get that information elsewhere. You can only get the information Midwest Living, the Iowan, and Iowa History Journal are offering by subscribing to those publications, in my estimation. They're niche markets, and niche markets are taking over the publication field. One way yes, it took a lot of courage, Charity, for me to jump in and do this. And one thing that Trevor and Beth will cringe what I'm going to say is one way I've kept my costs down is I don't have a salary. I've made zero money personally for the last year and a half off Iowa History Journal. So our key is to keep our costs as low as possible. My wife is a tremendous customer server and a service person and runs the general office. And we have a lot of our writers are very, very recognized writers in their chosen field, but they're personal friends of mine, and they believe in the mission. They believe in what we're doing. My goal is to keep the costs as low as possible for the first 3 or 4 years of publication. I've started two other publications from scratch. One's in its 25th year, and the other's in its 15th year. I don't own them anymore. I've sold them, but I think Trevor and Beth have marvelous publications with great content and great heritage. So they're several steps ahead of Iowa History Journal. We just have to continue to grow, and we'll grow by me going out and giving speeches and telling people what we're all about, by marketing it, and by keeping our costs low.
Bill is on the line from Des Moines. Hello, Bill.
Hi.
What would you like to talk about?
Well, several things, but maybe backing up on places to visit in Iowa. Iowa has a network of country school museums, and we're approaching having one in every county. So that is certainly a very useful historical resource. It's readily available. We have a website through Preservation Iowa, preservationiowa.org, where most of the country school museums are listed, so that is a source that people could visit to get information on a school near where they live. The other comment I'd like to make, Iowa is very fortunate, and the people that live in Iowa are blessed to have three such wonderful publications that you've talked about today. My hunch is there probably aren't publications like those three in many of the other states in the country, and so we have a rich outlet to learn about Iowa and appreciate what living in Iowa can be through these publications. And I just want to thank the people, the editors, for providing this for the rest of us to enjoy.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for your call, and thanks for your work with country schools as well. Before I let you go today, Beth, why don't we start with you? What would you like, if you could communicate to everyone around the nation, what would you like people to understand about Iowa?
Excuse me. I guess that... Boy, that's a complicated question. I think I would want people to return to Iowa again and again, whether it's physically or through our magazine, and discover something new and interesting, and understand that Iowa, the actual Iowa we live in today, while we perhaps live up to some of our stereotypes, we really shatter a lot of other stereotypes. And it's a very surprising place.
All right. How about you, Trevor?
Well, I would tell people, and I have told them this about Iowa, is so much of what you might think is a cliche and must just be sentimental stuff really exists still in Iowa. And that sounds a little bit hokey, but it's true. There's so much. I've had many people – I work with a lot of New Yorkers, and they'll come out here. And I remember one guy told me after he'd spent a little time in some smaller towns around Iowa, he said, "Trevor, it's like a John Mellencamp song out here." he couldn't believe that people really live this way. And by that means we can see the stars, that we have short commutes, that little kids play baseball on the corners. I mean, all this sort of stereotypical all-American things, so much of that, it's true. And, you know, I hear the stories like Mike is telling. I mean, we have flesh and blood heroes in our towns that we still look to. They're not all out there. They're here. And I think that's what a lot of people miss about Iowa. And you go to things like the State Fair and little towns like Decorah and these places that legitimately so much of what you'd like to believe about the Midwest and about America, you'll find a lot of that here.
And, Mike, I'll let you have the last word. What would you like people to know about Iowa?
Well, our motto is reliving our grand past and investing in our great future. And Iowa has a fabulous past, and it does have a great future. And it all comes down to people. Iowa has had some remarkable people. We had the first president west of the Mississippi. We've had movie actors like John Wayne. We've had sports heroes like Frank Gotch and Bob Feller and Niall Kinnick. But it's all about people to me. We've had marvelous people here. We have marvelous people here. And then they've built a lot of great places to visit, and Trevor and Beth have put out magazines that really speak to that. And my magazine speaks to the great people that lived here. And I'm just really proud to be an Iowan, and I think everybody else should be too.
Mike, thank you so much for your time today. Mike Chapman is the publisher of Iowa History Journal. Beth Wilson is the editor of The Iowan. Thank you, Beth, for being here. And Trevor Mears is the executive editor of Midwest Living. Thank you so much for your time today, Trevor.
My pleasure.
Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Technical support from John Pemble in Des Moines. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on Talk of Iowa, high school football in Iowa and what it means to small towns across the state. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.